Last meeting, as we had been in meeting, we had the response from the task force on the Public Utility Commission from Duncan Wise as the chair and Marion Hutton. I think Duncan Wise gave us pretty ample information about it, and we would like to, at this time, have Chair Ickes please respond to the issues that were brought before us in 3615.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Ron Ickes, Chairman of the Oregon Public Utility Commission. Can I give your staff copies of a letter that we have sent to the task force members, thanking them for their work and explaining how we intend to respond to some of their recommendations. Basically, we have codified, as they requested, our existing internal operating guidelines. We're going to use that as a starting point for a collaborative discussion with the parties that will address the issues that were raised in terms of separation of the staff functions between the advocacy function in a contested case and the advisory function with the commission, as well as explore some of the options for greater commission interaction during some of the contested case proceedings. I think the point I'd like to make is that we have already responded and are responding to some of the recommendations. The task force itself recognized that the commission was utilizing already some of the tools it was recommending, and we are continuing to do those and to expand those. A couple of examples are that the in the PGE and Pacific Corps rate cases to implement Senate Bill 1149, the commission scheduled a March 22nd oral briefing on the major policy issues involved in that case. I think specific emphasis is going to be on the standard offer, development of the standard offer for the large commercial and industrial customers who are eligible for direct access to non-utility providers. In the Pacific Corps application for deferral and amortization of net power costs, the commission scheduled a special public meeting April 5th for a summary of the issues by the parties before issuance of an order. And we're currently considering a request by Northwest Natural for oral argument after legal briefs on a declaratory ruling regarding a dispute over the nature of customer-owned pipeline bypass in Linn County. We are waiting for other parties to respond to Northwest Natural's request. I think in discussing the task force report, it's important to recognize first what the task force did say and did find. First, they found that the PUC is, in fact, doing a good job in a difficult environment with a highly complex mission. They found that the current overall structure of the PUC is, in fact, working well, and that fundamental structural changes are not needed. They found the current structure enables a relatively small staff to specialize and provides a structure that is adaptable to changing conditions and a variety of decision-making processes. They found that most interested parties agreed that the staff is competent and has provided professional and rigorous analysis of cases presented by regulated companies. The task force did not believe that the current processes and policies have resulted in a pattern of unfair treatment, and the task force did not believe and had not been furnished with any information that demonstrated or implied that there has been any improper behavior by any commissioner, administrative law judge, or assistant attorney general, or any staff member. So in effect, the task force found that there really is no fault with our product or fault with the job that we are doing. What they did conclude that our processes did need some improvement to improve the transparency, to improve the perception of fairness, and the confidence level that's of others that staff was not exercising any undue influence over the commission in contested case decision meetings. And they made a series of recommendations regarding more interactive involvement of commissioners and regarding separation of staff's role in contested case proceedings. The commission is responding to those recommendations, many of which urge the commission to continue applying some of the tools it already utilizes. What the task force did not do is recommend that the commission be required to adopt any particular tool in all cases. In fact, the task force was very careful to make it clear that was not its intent, and it would be inappropriate to do so. Task force clearly qualified its recommendations. It recognized the commission already utilizes some of the recommended methods. It recognized that not all the tools may be appropriate in all cases, and it recognized that some of the recommendations may in fact lengthen proceedings, and it recognized an element of practicality that needed to be considered in applying any of the tools. The task force assumed that, and I quote, the decision whether to use one or more of these tools and its impact on the schedule for a case would be decided with the input of all parties to the proceeding in a pre-hearing conference or during the course of the case, end quote. In the instance of a cross-examination hearing, the task force did not recommend requiring a quorum. Instead, it qualified its recommendations. It said whenever practical, it said at least one commissioner, not necessarily two, and it said when substantive. In fact, in testimony before this subcommittee, the vice chair of the task force, Marianne Hutton, explicitly stated, the task force recognizes that it would be impractical to require a quorum for every hearing and that it was not necessary that the commissioners be at every single type of hearing. What the task force was seeking was more interaction with the commission to provide more guidance to the parties and to increase the confidence level in the process. I think there may be some misunderstanding of the so-called evidentiary hearing and what it entails. This is generally the cross-examination of witnesses. It is not the full presentation or a full airing of the evidence in a case. Most of the evidence and most of the testimony is presented in writing well before cross-examination. And who and what is subject to cross-examination is narrowed down by the discretion of the parties. It is, in fact, not the place to provide guidance as sought by the parties in the task force testimony because of the timing that it occurs in the case. You have people submitting initial testimony. You have then initial testimony of all the parties in the case. You have rebuttal testimony. You get to cross-examination. The nature of that proceeding and the timing of it is not the best place for the parties to receive guidance from the commission on how to proceed in the case. Plus, it could also, requiring a quorum of the commission could also conflict with the desire to expedite proceedings. Parties have enough trouble coordinating with their own schedules, let alone the commission. What the parties were asking wasn't that a quorum be present at cross-examination or any other evidentiary hearing. They were asking for more interaction with the commission during the course of a case, and that usually involves setting up special meetings for particular purposes. And that's exactly what we've begun to do as the three meetings that I cited are cited in the letter to the task force members. Requiring a quorum, as I understand there's legislation that's been introduced to you, is really contrary to the recommendations of the task force, and it was not identified as a problem nor identified as a solution by the task force. We think a better approach is to let us meet with stakeholders and try and respond to the task force recommendations rather than adopt some legislation that puts the commission in a difficult position and doesn't really address the issue raised by the task force. In summary, I don't think the task force gave any indication that the commission is not getting its work done or that it's not doing its work well. And we have committed and we are fully confident that through our effort to codify the guidelines and to meet with the stakeholders that we can, in fact, develop a response to the two concerns raised by the task force that will address the objectives that they raised. The task force also recognized that the problems with separation of staff were related in large part to the relatively small size of the staff and the dual role that they are given. And it recognized that in order to create what they wanted as a brighter line between the advocacy and the advisory, that it may in fact take legislative support for increased limitation and increased staff to do that. It is our hope that by meeting with the stakeholders, we can develop processes, procedures, develop rules and guidelines that will meet the objectives of being clear, of being transparent, and of creating confidence on the part of the parties that staff does not have undue influence without having to come back to the legislature and ask for additional staff. So that, Mr. Chairman, is how we are responding to the task force recommendations, and we will, I feel pretty confident. I think, you know, I've sat and listened to most of the testimony of the other parties, and I think it was productive. I think there were a lot of misunderstandings. I think the task force revealed a lot of things that to parties about what we were doing that and revealed to us some of the concerns that we didn't realize existed. But I think there's a greater understanding of how we do our work, what the constraints on it are because of the size of the staff. I think based on the recommendations and based on the thing they said, there are ways for us to do this without having to come back for additional staff. And we'd like the opportunity to try and do that without any legislation that requires us to adopt any particular tool in all proceedings and without having to ask for additional staff to create the bright line that the task force wanted. I'd be happy to answer questions about the task force report.
Thank you, Mr. Egas. I appreciate the time you spent with me, at least on the hearings officer portion. It was very crucial and informative. So,
other questions from the committee? Senator Yee.
Thank you. Mr. Egas, when you say meet with the stakeholders to discuss these recommendations, how are you going to do it? Are you going to go around the state and visit with ratepayers, or do you visit with utility companies? How do you,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Yee, we would be meeting by stakeholders in this case. I think we're talking about those that generally and regularly participate in our proceedings. And I'm not sure Mr. Barkin has more specifics, but I think we would do it by setting up a series of initial workshops for discussion, trying to identify what some options were, identifying what things needed to be in rules, what things needed to be clarified, and go from there. It's important to work with the parties because the parties are the ones in large part who determine the process in a case. They determine the schedule. They determine the issues list. They determine who they want to cross-examine. So they are the ones that we would be working with because all of these tools impact the schedule of a case. And I think the task force was pretty clear in its recommendation that it assumed that that the decision whether to use any more of these tools, and there's a list of recommendations they have, and its impact on a schedule for a case would be decided with the input of all parties to the proceeding during the case. So those are really the stakeholders we'd be meeting with, those that were regularly involved in our and participating in our cases. That would be the utilities that make the filings. That would be the customer groups that regularly intervene, some of the competitors that regularly intervene across all the industries.
Because usually, Mr. Chairman, when we talk about meeting with stakeholders, we think about going around the state and visit with stakeholders. But in this case, you're going to meet with them locally in Salem to discuss.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yeah, I think that's probably the case. Remember, because these recommendations are asking for or related specifically to contested case proceedings, not to those things that are generally done in our other public meeting process.
Thank you, Mr. Egas. Senator Yee, Representative Butler, before he left, asked scheduling to let you go first on the residential service fund.
Okay, is he going to come back?
Well, he's planning on coming back.
Oh.
He'll probably be back. He's testifying on behalf of two of his bills in another committee.
Oh.
And will be returning to this committee when he's done.
Oh.
But he asked that you proceed with the residential service protection fund with the rest of the committee.
Thank you. Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about my concerns. I think Sue has helped me prepare some information and has passed this out. You all have this on page 3 of the handout. I think we should put 1 cent next to the $722,000. Mm-hmm. And 3 cents next to the $3,412,000.
Which page are you on, Senator Yee, so people can get on board? Everyone won't have that page.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Rikas,
yes.
Do you have a copy of what Senator Yee
said? I'm not sure I do. I have a copy of a letter we sent to Senator Yee, but I'm not sure what document you're referring to.
I think that's part of the packet that
yes.
Sue
uh-huh.
passed out.
Okay. Okay.
Except it's got handwritten notes on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's 1 cent for the telecommunication device access program, and it's 3 cents for the Oregon telephone assistance program. I don't want to use the acronym. For fear of being fined.
Well, Senator, I represent Butler's out of the committee, so.
Oh.
Yeah, but I'll tell.
All right.
And 6 cents for the Oregon telecommunication relay service. So there is an option package 103 to fund these three programs. And these three programs are to be sunsetted by January 1, 2002. So there's a House bill introduced to extend this 10 cents excise tax. And I am opposed to these excise taxes. There's nothing we can do with a 6 cents extension because they are federally mandated program to provide the relay service. But the 3 cents to assist low-income households with their telephone bills, and 1 cent excise tax for providing a hearing device, loaning of the hearing device. That's something I don't think belongs to the function of PUC. I think Public Utility Commission is here to make sure we have reasonable rates and adequate energy supply and make sure the investors receive return on their investment. But by adding the subsidy to low-income households and the loaning of devices, we're distorting the market forces that help us make sure the investment companies operate at the most efficient rate and the ratepayers receive the lowest possible rate for their use of the telephone. So this function should belong to either Human Resources Division or belongs to nonprofit organization. It is not a function of PUC, and we should not mandate taxpayers or ratepayers to pay charitable activities that they have no choice. They have to contribute toward these causes.
So which House bill is it? Do you know which House bill the, or when, does PUC know which House bill?
I think it's 2105.
And it's passed the House. It's in, I think, the Business, Labor, and Economic mm-hmm. and the Committee or whatever.
I didn't have a chance to get to the House committee before their hearing. But so if we do not extend the 3 cents for the telephone low-income subsidy and we do not extend the 1 cent for hearing device, so we can lower this excise tax by 4 cents. And the result is they have to see the federal government already subsidized them by $5.25 a month. So if we do not extend this excise tax, they will receive about $5 less a month, $3.50 from the state and $1.50 from additional federal subsidy. So I think $5 a month lower in phone bill is manageable. Maybe they can prioritize their phone calls. And the hearing...
Senator, so I can clarify. On your telecommunications device access program, you're saying eliminate that fully?
Yes.
And on the Oregon Telephone Assistance Program, you're saying eliminate that fully?
Yes.
And the only thing to keep is your Oregon Telecommunications Relay Service?
Yes. The federal...
But I think the limit, and Sue, correct me if I'm wrong, but the limit of what we could do in the budget bill is to unschedule those two pieces subject to the passage of House Bill 2105, so that way it wouldn't be included in this particular budget. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, you could do that. Another option, and that's what I would recommend, in fact, not that we're in a work session, but right now my recommendation for that policy package would be to unschedule the limitation pending the passage of House Bill 2105. The other option you have is to not approve the package, and if the bill passes, they can come back to the emergency board during the interim to get the limitation that they need, depending on how the bill comes out.
So are you saying unscheduling the whole thing or just the allow the 6 cents to be scheduled and unschedule the 4 cent portion?
Well, I think you have to unschedule the
whole thing.
I would recommend unscheduling the whole thing since it's contingent upon legislation that's not been passed yet by the government.
And I think in regard to the Oregon Telecommunications Relay Service, you know, I don't know. I think it would probably take some effort to administer that and change that over. And I think it's probably something we need to look at. Certainly, I would agree with you. But I think maybe we can do that because you sit on the Human Resources Budget Committee as well as this committee. Maybe we can put a budget note in each of those to report back. Unless you want to, I mean, I don't.
I would like to see that it be eliminated, the 4 cents.
No, this, I know, but we can argue that as part of House Bill 2105,
right?
But on the Oregon Telecommunications Relay Service, the $5,462,642, we could request a budget note in both this and the DHR budget to look at moving this, and if there would be some cost savings and efficiencies, and report back to the appropriate interim committee to do that. I don't think it's something you can do overnight, but I may be wrong on that. And maybe the PUC can respond to that.
Mr. Chairman,
Before PUC respond, I just want to finish my argument.
Oh, okay.
My additional information I want the committee to have is, you know, we already funded the Senior and Disabled Services Department by $1.29 billion and 989 FTE. And the Disability Commission is funded at $1.65 million with 5 FTE. And Mental Health and Developmentally Disability Services Division is funded with $1.6 billion. The general fund and federal fund and other funds with 2,564 FTE. And this session, we've been given a litigation settlement, the Staley case, and that is another $400 million. So out of all these departments and services, there must be a way for them to take care of this part of the human services activity. without any increase in cost. And I think they should be able to work this out. And I just want to also say that the hearing device is loaned without income means test. So I think not every hearing impaired person is low income. They should be able to pay for their own devices.
But I think, doesn't the department, or doesn't the PUC contract this out with Sprint? So this money, so basically they're managing a contract, is my understanding.
The relay service is managed with
the
contract.
Right, mm-hmm. That's 6 cents.
That's too. 6 cents, yes. The rest they handle in their own department.
Right.
The low-income subsidy and the loaning of the devices.
But my question is to you is,
mm-hmm.
Your first preference would be to then eliminate the 4 cents.
Right.
If 4 cents is not eliminated,
mm-hmm.
then your next preference would be to move it to Department of Human Services.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And in regards to the telecommunications relay service, where do you want that to go?
That has to stay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because it's a federally mandated program.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't we talk really, are you done with your?
Yes, mm-hmm. Right.
With what you had to say.
I have written down what I just said, so I just let everybody have a copy for the record. Thank you.
And then I guess the question to address then to the PUC is,
mm-hmm.
how easy would it be to move the telecommunications devices access program and the Oregon telephone assistance program? Well, you may agree or disagree. I'm interested in those bodies and moving the whole thing. I mean, it's not just something we can say, hey, your new office is over there, and that's where you report to.
Mr. Chairman,
maybe we should wait. Let's let the committee stand at ease. I want to make sure Sue's here so
mm-hmm.
she can capture the essence.
Stand at ease. That sounds military.
It does. I'm wondering if I did that in my chair. You want me to stand in my chair?
Sure. Stand on it.
Stand on it?
We'll spin you around.
Okay.